for September 10th, 2021. This is episode 83 of PHP Roundtable. It's been over 10 years since a developer from Hot Springs, Arkansas, who was a professional .NET developer by day and a PHP hacker by night, decided to type his first lines of code for a small PHP framework that could. Today, that framework, Laravel, has grown to be the PHP industry leading framework and continues to grow every day. With over 66,000 stars on GitHub, it has spawned an entire ecosystem of its own, filled with education, packages, services dedicated to supporting the Laravel framework. Today, we'll discuss the journey Laravel has taken over the past 10 years, some of the people it has impacted, and where things are headed. I'm your host, Eric Green Johnson, and thanks for joining us. Let's get to know our panelists. Our first panelist has hosted several of his own podcasts, including the Laravel podcast and his newest venture, Worth Learning. He's authored the Laravel Up and Running book, is a conference speaker, and a founding partner of the development group Titan, and probably one of the most chilled Zen people I know, Matt Stauffer.
For those who are not watching the video, I made a little heart shape because that just made me so happy. I like being chilled. Am I just saying hi? Is there anything else I'm supposed to say? Okay. Hi, everybody.
Hi, I'm Matt. My next panelist, when he's not out on the links somewhere in North Carolina chasing little white balls around, you can catch him running his news empire, where they report on everything happening in the Laravel universe and web world. From a daily blog post to a podcast, Laravel News has become the one-stop shop to stay current with Laravel. Welcome, Eric Burns.
Thank you, thank you.
And finally, I think it's pretty safe to say our last panelist has contributed directly to Laravel framework longer and more than any of us. Recognized as Arkansas businesses, one of Arkansas's business 40 under 40 entrepreneurs, Taylor Otwell.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thank you all for joining me. I do appreciate it. Obviously, if you're watching this, you're probably wondering why you're not watching it live. And I do apologize. We did try. We worked with it for a little while and couldn't get it working, but it is what it is. You just got to move on. Don't have to tell you. So first thing, 40 under 40. I had the benefit of Taylor doing an interview for me for PHP Architect, I think it was last month. And I just get fascinated by these, like when people in our industry get awards from outside our industry and like how that happens. That sort of thing is so cool to me. And I asked Taylor about it. And he, you know, Taylor's very modest. He's very, very low key. So, but I went and read the website, and to me, it's kind of funny. I could be totally off base here, but it's funny because you can kind of get the sense that they're not really, really clear on what Taylor does, but they're it's very clear that he's successful and good at it. So you know, they kind of gave him the award.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is something hard to explain, you know, to people that aren't very technical. You know, it's just, you know, if you tell someone you build iPhone apps or you build video games, that's pretty clear to people. But when you tell people you build a PHP development framework, it's just not as clear.
Yeah, yeah. Even working with PHP or developing for the web, I mean, yeah. To this day, my mom is just like, He makes websites. He makes a living doing it. So I guess he's pretty good at it, but
yeah,
it's more than websites, Mom. So we're coming off of Laracon. I technically still online.
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
You were in a really good position, or Laravel was in a really good position from the perspective that the Laracon had the in-person conference. They had a US-based one, EU-based one, which were really like the big ones. And then there were some more around the world. But Laracon Online had also been established a couple years before the pandemic. So when we hit the pandemic and we went into this lockdown mode, the transition, the idea of, okay, we can't do in-person, but we're going to continue to have this gathering, we're going to continue to share this knowledge, was a pretty easy transition for the community. What is the future? Do we have, I know we talked about this a little bit with PHP Architect, but the plans moving forward back to in-person?
Well, yeah, in some ways, yeah, that's already kind of set in stone because Laracon EU is actually scheduled for January as an in-person event. I'm not sure like what the travel restrictions will be for me at that time, like if they'll be letting US citizens into the Netherlands in January. If they are, my intention is to go. If they're not, of course, I'll have no choice but to stay here. But yeah, I know at least Laracon EU will be in person in January. I think it's possible I'll do a Laracon US in person. You know, it's kind of tough. And I've talked about it with Ian a little bit, who helps run the conference along with Eric. Running a conference in person is way more stressful and way more overhead than running a conference online, as you might expect. And there's also just the thing that more people can attend the online conference. So it is sort of more globally accessible and more affordable since the tickets are only like $25 an attendee. Sort of everyone can be a part of it. Whereas to go to Laracon in person, you know, in the US, you're realistically talking about probably over $1,000 per person, because between plane tickets and your $400 or $500 Laracon ticket and meals and Ubers and all of that, it's an expensive, attending any conference is just really expensive in person. So only a small number of people get to experience it, but you know, there's just something about in-person conferences that are also hard to replicate, you know, being able to hang out with everyone, go out to dinner, have after parties, like you just can't recreate that kind of camaraderie online. So it's always tempting to do it, even though it's a lot more work. I think if I do it again next year in 2022, I'll probably scale it down a little bit. When we had the last Laracon in 2019, that was over 900 people, and it was just a really big undertaking in New York City. And the number of venues that can even accommodate approaching 1,000 people comfortably and be able to seat everyone comfortably is a smaller selection for sure. Compared to back when we used to have 400 or 500 person conferences, we had a lot more options in terms of venues. So yeah, I don't feel like I really directly answered the question because I'm not totally sure myself yet. It's something I definitely need to decide pretty soon, because if we are going to do it in person, I really need to get that venue booked. So probably within the next month or two, I'll decide and probably go ahead and announce if whether or not that's going to happen.
Matt, from your perspective as a business owner, I know Titan has a pretty big showing at Laracon, but as running a business full of developers, I imagine a good amount of them Laravel developers, what's your opinion of the in-person to online conference experience?
It's a great question. I mean, there's the pros and the cons. If we were to ignore all the things Taylor just said, right? Like the online ones increase access, not in, just in terms of who can go, but also in terms of the cost of going. So there's a huge value to be had in online conferences. And I love them. And it helps our company in one way, because when we send the entire team to Laracon, it's not just the cost, it's also the lost work. We miss a week of work. The entire company misses a week of work. That's a lot of money. So there's something to be said about an online conference. That said, we get an incredible value from the in-person conference as well. First of all, it basically is functionally an on-site for our company every year. We're all together in the same place. We're all interacting with each other. Additionally, we're meeting other people in the industry. So we're making these connections. We're seeing people we've interacted with on, you know, online through pull requests or through Twitter in person. And a lot of our hiring has often happened out of those relationships. Now, it's very important to me to not just focus our hiring on people we've met in person, because like Taylor said, not everybody can hire, you know, afford $1,000. To go to a conference, but it is a relationship building opportunity. And sometimes hiring happens in the context or even collaborating and working together with other companies. It happens in that context. So the social aspect of in-person conferences can't be replicated online. So for me, the ideal world has both. But one of the things I love that Taylor's doing is trying to minimize the cost to people or the loss to people who don't have the ability to be there in person, whether there's none in their country or they don't have the money for all that. one of the things he's had to fight a lot in the past is, you know, if he does big announcements at an in-person conference, how do we get that information out to everybody else and without them feeling like they're missing out? And so I think that it's great to have online conferences that mitigate some of that. But I do really love both as a business owner and just as a member of the community.
I couldn't agree more. Eric, your thoughts? Obviously, you have some skin in the game here.
No, I actually agree with everything that's already been said. I love the, you know, the in-person, just to meet the people and, you know, meet new friends every year and you know, find your old friends. The online I love because the same way everybody, you know, there's a bigger chance that everybody can attend. You know, got to give props to Titan. They do a scholarship program. So even people that, you know, can't afford the ticket, you know, we get people that will donate tickets or buy tickets and, you know, donate them to people that, you know, that don't have the funds to actually come to the online event. So, you know, things like that to try to bring everybody in into the ecosystem, I think is great. But I do miss seeing everybody in person, you know, getting those selfie pictures every year. But outside of that, it's everything they've already said.
That's great. This year's conference, Taylor, one of the things you talked about that really struck a chord with me, you were talking about how Laravel, especially in the early days, was defined by the people using Laravel and by the documentation around Laravel, people like Jeffrey Way and Laracast. And that really struck a chord with me because that's what made Laravel so approachable to me. I had been doing PHP for a while. I'd been working with frameworks for a while, but to the point of what you talked about, the struggle of trying to figure out how to do some of the, even some of the basic things was never very clearly documented. And between just the Laravel documentation, which I know you spent a lot of time on doing, and then on top of that, Jeffrey Way coming up with like everything I was trying to work on, Jeffrey Way was like creating a video for, was just, you know, really one of the things that helped me embrace Laravel and continue. I'm curious, Matt and Eric, the two of you, Eric, I could be wrong, correct me if I'm wrong. I think you had a little bit of an inside track with Laravel, but what got the two of you started with Laravel?
I guess I'll go first. So I started with CodeIgniter and then basically, so from CodeIgniter, the other framework out at the time, I think was called Fuel. That was sort of getting a little steam behind it. And then I found Laravel like right after that. And the same way, the documentation, the tutorials, all that stuff pulled me in. And that's how I met Taylor. And then, yeah, we ended up working together for a little bit at Userscape. But really the old ways back then, you know, Laravel was like this, you know, breath of fresh air. It was pushing the framework forward, where it felt like some of the other ones were kind of not pushing the things forward. You know, even like CodeIgniter, it kind of stalled at that like 1.7 stage, and then I think 2 came out right after I picked up Laravel, and just I never looked back from there, and just kind of really liked the framework and like where it's headed, and just kind of stuck with it for now until it's no more.
Yeah, I mean, my story is pretty similar. I had written vanilla PHP years and years and years before, and then decided to go not the route of programming. So I went and I did nonprofit work for a while, but I ended up being the guy who did the websites and the tech stuff for all the stuff at the nonprofit, and then ended up building a software as a service. And I was like, well, I know PHP, I'll write it in custom PHP. And I was like, this is miserable. And I was like, oh, there's this thing called Cake PHP. So I tried it in Cake. And then I was like, I'm not sure. And then I got a part-time job working in Expression Engine. And so I learned CodeIgniter. And I was like, okay. So I started again in a CodeIgniter. And then when I left the nonprofit, realized I really wanted to do programming. So I just said, man, CodeIgniter is not it. You know, like it's so far behind. And for those who don't know, CodeIgniter was spun off from Expression Engine and then really never maintained. And when people were trying to do like open source maintenance on it, the company that technically owned it just wouldn't merge it, wouldn't push it. So it was like, it was being held back by the company behind Expression Engine, which stinks. And just for anyone to know, that's not the same people who own it anymore. The people who own it now are Laravel guys, wonderful people, but it wasn't like that back then. So I was learning about like Rails and all this kind of stuff, but then I started learning about dependency injection containers. So I read this thing about a dependency injection container for CodeIgniter. And I messaged the author and I was like, hey, I can't find your CI container for CodeIgniter anymore, or DepemDI. And he's like, oh yeah, I got rid of it and I made this new framework Laravel instead. And so started using Laravel, and I was scheduled to go to the first conference and then couldn't because of stuff. But from then it was just so clear, because we were really just about to like get out of the PHP world. We were about to do Rails. We took on some Rails projects, and I just, man, it was just so much better to get back to Laravel. And like you said, you know, the documentation's been great. The community was great. At that point, I joined the IRC and stuff like that. And just the people have been wonderful since. So it's just been, it's been great ever since.
Yeah. I'm curious. I don't know if you're in this position, Matt. I'm not sure what your Titan's business model is. Excuse me. I know you do a lot of consulting, a lot of work, but with our company, especially early on, I was a little bit more nervous about it early on, but it's definitely settled down. We were constantly put in a position where we were giving clients guidance on directions to take. And one of those directions became the Laravel framework, and making arguments of, or not arguments, but trying to give them the why they want to invest into this framework. Are you guys in that position? Do you find yourself in that position? And if so, what are your selling points for Laravel? Yeah.
We were in the position before Moore, because more of our work in the past than is today came because of our reputation as people who make great apps, not people who make great Laravel apps. It still happens today, but it's less, like, it's not the majority anymore. But I would say that back then and now, the person who you're talking to, if they're the primary decision maker, has some reason to be thinking about PHP in the first place. And so if they're in PHP, it's usually because their existing ecosystem and infrastructure are PHP, their programmers are PHP programmers. And at that point, it becomes really easy to make the pitch, because if you're not in a place, like, to me, there's really only two players in the PHP world. And I apologies if there's other big players, like, I don't live in the PHP world that much, but like, I've never talked to anybody who's considered anything other than Symfony or Laravel. So really the conversation comes down to Symfony versus Laravel. And very, very, very seldom is that actually what the person's interested in talking about for us. Nobody has made me make the pitch about Laravel versus Symfony, because if they've heard of them, first of all, they understand that Laravel is the bigger one. And second of all, the type of clients we're working with are very well served by Laravel. So that's just peculiar to me and the type of clients that I end up working with. What's more likely for us, though, is that they have somebody at their company, maybe this the IT guy that got hired later and thinks Node's great, or the person on the board who just read some article about how the future is going to be Rust or Go or something like that. And then it's going to be a lot more about the combination of making the pitch of Laravel and making the pitch of PHP at the same time. And so the pitch for PHP often ends up being, it's established, it's everywhere, it's fast, it's super performant. You can find PHP programmers anywhere. There's a ton of them everywhere. And the pitch for Laravel ends up being, it's the most modern of the PHP ecosystem. It's got inbuilt tooling for everything. You've got pre-built things for, you know, social authentication, for OAuth, like everything you can possibly imagine is there. And usually that kind of works for them. And usually they have some kind of idea of like, oh, PHP is old. Well, then we can walk through them about why that's not actually the case. You know, it's just these various concerns. But I would say that the most valuable, like if it weren't just the biz dev context, the most valuable way I've been able to convince people that Laravel has a lot to offer is to talk about the fact that all the primary concerns that people have for frameworks like this, Laravel wins if you were to make a competition, all of them. And so, like, I have a lot of friends who are coming out of boot camps who are full stack JavaScript, which is wonderful because you only need to know one. And they say, well, why should I go learn Laravel? Why should I go learn PHP? And my pitch to them usually is, imagine you were building a full stack application with logon and people can pay you, and you're going to have an API to their mobile app, and just these really common things, right, that all of our apps have. Maybe you need an admin panel. What are you going to use to build them in your full stack, you know, or even in Rails, right, which doesn't have nearly as many pre-built things? And then I'll list off, and I'm like, well, you can use Socialite for this. You can use Nova for that. You can use Cashier for that. And I'm just like, they're all built in, and they're all the internal ecosystem. And I think the easiest way to convince people outside of the Laravel world of the value that is here is not even just talking about the framework, although there's a ton to talk about there, but just the ecosystem around it, the educational ecosystem, the tooling, the first-party tooling, the second-party tooling, third-party tooling. It's just so easy to show, like, there is so much here for you to work with. It's so well vetted. The majority of it's free. It's all excellent. So sorry for a long answer, but
great. Great answer. Appreciate it. So Taylor, obviously PHP is the core of Laravel. How much of an impact, because PHP has been going through some pretty quick iterations to the language benefit. It's become, the language has become very relevant again. You know, it kind of stalled there for a long time. Now that the internals team, that they have a pretty good cadence of releases, of features, of merging things in. How big of an impact does that have for you in maintaining Laravel compatibility? And how much thought do you put into what's happening in PHP when you're thinking about the next version of Laravel?
Yeah. So that's a pretty good question. I came into PHP at a pretty lucky time, I feel like, because I came in PHP 5.3, which really enabled a lot of the features that we all kind of take for granted in Laravel today, like Eloquent. Very hard to write something like Eloquent before PHP 5.3 because there was no late static binding until PHP 5.3. And then, of course, namespaces and closures. Closures is another heavily used PHP feature in Laravel. And then PHP 5.4, we immediately got traits, which allowed me to do a lot of interesting things. And you see traits all over Laravel as well. As far as the newer releases, you know, with the release cycle, I do feel like we have to spend a little bit more time than we used to thinking about PHP upgrades, because there's been sometimes there's kind of slightly small breaking changes in the PHP release cycle as they kind of try to get rid of, I think, some of the really legacy features of PHP that they might feel like developers kind of shoot themselves in the foot with and that don't really have a place in modern PHP anymore. So sometimes we have to work around that. I think like it's always like little minor things, like trying to count something that is, I think, counting null or something. You used to be able to count null and it would return zero, and now it throws an error or something like that. Little things like that. As they remove those legacy things, we do have to think about that, but it's never anything, at least recently, it's never been anything super, super major, other than as we've accumulated more and more packages, that kind of makes us have to go through more and more code to sort those things out. But thankfully with, you know, GitHub Actions and tests, we usually know pretty quick where any problems are.
Yeah. I see you tweet out a lot, Taylor, about the paper cuts. Like, you know, what are the quick fixes that annoy people that you can address? Is there anything? It doesn't have to be a paper cut. It doesn't have to be small. Is there what sections of the Laravel core that bother you, or you really want to rework or redo, or just doesn't work quite the way you want? What sections are there any sections like that?
Well, I get asked this quite a bit, actually, and it's hard to answer because over the last 10 years, I actually have rewritten a lot of sections of Laravel. So I've rewritten Eloquent probably 3 times, I would say. I've rewritten the routing layer a few times. I've rewritten how mail works, and some of this stuff is done kind of gradually. And sometimes even the way they used to work still works in Laravel. So like, for example, the mail stuff, you know, we didn't used to have mailable classes in Laravel where like your email is represented by a class and it can have, extra helper methods on it and stuff like that. And that's the only way to send email right now that's documented in Laravel, but it used to have to like used to call mail send and then send a blade template as a string and then a callback that would set all this extra data about the email. And that was the only way to send email. Well, I can't really like, it's hard to totally just remove the entire syntax for how to send an email. So what we usually do is rewrite a new way to send email on top of the old way and then keep both in place for a while and then remove the documentation for the old way of doing things. And like, that's kind of like what we've done for mail, for queued jobs, for things like that. So I do actually rewrite things like that over time. But I try to make it to where it's not such a like paradigm shifting change for people. Stuff currently that bothers me, gosh, I feel like I've rewritten so much stuff over the years. There's not a ton of stuff left. One thing I would like to be able to do that comes to mind is be able to consume queued jobs from any external application that's not a Laravel application, or vice versa, queue jobs from a Laravel application that are consumed by an application in another language. And you kind of can do that already. Like if you queue a job from Laravel, it will queue it to like Redis or a database where any other application can talk to that database. But it's very like PHP centric because it serializes like the class name into the queue job. And that might not make sense for another language, you know, stuff like that, sort of like language agnostic queue support. At the same time, that kind of stuff is sort of hard to do because the more sort of like, you know, tightly coupled the framework is together, it makes everything work really well together and makes it really cohesive. So like being able to just release a job or delete a job really conveniently. Whereas if you start consuming jobs from other systems that don't really have a lot of those features, it can be hard to provide a nice developer experience. So I don't know, those are tough problems to crack, but that's one of the ones that comes to mind and that other people have brought up as well, just out in the community.
That's great. It kind of maybe leads a little bit into the next question. I think we have three fairly unique perspectives on it. It doesn't need to be Laravel specific. I guess it doesn't even necessarily need to be web specific, but I'm curious about what trends we are all seeing from our respective positions in our current industry. And Eric, I'd like to start with you because you know, you have so much news coming into you on a regular basis. Are there any trends you see happening that you're like, oh yeah, I've noticed there's been a big shift to something?
NFTs.
Yeah.
Buying pictures of monkeys.
What is it? Web 3.0? Yeah, that's sort of the big thing. Within Laravel itself, you know, if I still feel like, I don't know, everything's sort of cyclical. It feels like a lot of stuff's coming back toward testing now, which I think is really cool. You know, you've got the pest, you've got Frake and them creating a testing course. You know, everything sort of goes, I guess there's a pattern within the 10 years of doing this where, you know, things come and go, things get hot and then they cool down and then they come back again. That's what I've been noticing a lot of is like, you know, more of the testing stuff's coming up within Laravel. Outside of Laravel, yes, the, you know, the NFTs, the crypto stuff, all that stuff, I find it fascinating right now.
How about you, Matt? I mean, boots on the ground, working with clients. Are there trends that you're seeing? Clients are asking for something more, or?
I don't know. I would say that we have not seen an increase in SPAs like a lot of people would have expected. I think a lot of people in and out of Titan thought SPAs and APIs were just going to be where every single app moved, and I think that so for anyone who doesn't know, Caleb Porizio, while he worked at Titan, discovered that he preferred working with not SPAs and instead just kind of like decorative JavaScript on top of stuff. And after he left Titan, he ended up creating Livewire, which was basically a PHP structure that did the JavaScript for you, essentially. So it's basically the very Laravel-y way of building components, but those components, unlike normal Laravel components, actually have JavaScript interactions with them. And so that came a lot out of the fact that Caleb and I were kind of team Blade, which Blade is Laravel's rendering engine or its templating engine. And so we were team Blade, and there was also team, you know, Vue only or React only, whatever the company. And so I've always been biased in this direction. I would much rather use Blade until I absolutely have to use something else. And now Livewire lets me do it even further. But while we have plenty of clients who do want that kind of stuff, I do think that I've seen a little bit of a shift away from everybody assuming that that's the future. And it doesn't hurt that I'm very vocal about this, that like Keep It Simple Stupid, Yagni are really the ways of doing it. So that might, you know, impact the type of clients that we get, I'm not sure, or might even impact the decisions my programmers make on clients projects. But I do think that a lot of people really thought distributed microservices and SPAs, single page apps, were really where every single application was going to head in the future. And just that's not the case. Not to say that that's not going to be a thing and those things aren't helpful, or even API first design, but like, I think that a large percentage of our projects these days are fixing up a legacy applications. That's for sure the case. And very few of them have come to us wanting to move to an API or an SPA. Just an incredible number of people who just want the thing to do the freaking job, right? Like there are people who have SPAs, but almost always they have SPAs because somebody inside of their system was convinced that SPAs were the answer, not because SPAs were actually definitively any better for their use case. And that's not true for everybody. Some people were really very well served by it. But I would say that like, while SPAs are great and they have their place, I do think that I see a little bit of a shift towards people recognizing that you just got to use the right tool for the job, which of course has been like my thing for ages. I love that. Like don't build distributed microservices unless you actually need them. And so I do think that I'm seeing a little bit of a move towards people being more willing to just do server rendered stuff. And, you know, Rails is doing a lot of stuff in that direction. Livewire is doing a lot of stuff in that direction. A lot of people in the Laravel community are just working on things that make your server rendered stuff really good. Decorate it with JavaScript when you need, and don't worry about it when you don't need it.
Yeah.
And of course, outside of Laravel, I gotta admit, I've been pretty, I always forget bullish versus bearish, but I've been pretty negative on the imagination, the idea that crypto and NFTs are gonna change the future. And I still think that the majority of the excitement around NFTs right now are purely just basically speculative pyramid schemes based on people trying to make money off the other people trying to make money, and eventually it's all gonna fall apart. But I do think that Sol, especially crypto and NFTs, have a lot of potential. And people keep asking me, like, if there's no practical purpose for NFTs right now, other than just people selling pictures of apes for tens of thousands of dollars, why do you think it's going to do well? And I'm not one of those people who thinks it's going to transform the world. But I am a person who believes that when new technologies evolve that have unique kind of aspects to them, sometimes you don't understand the value of them until they're useful enough that your average person can reach for them. And then that's where you see when they're actually really useful. And somebody gave an example recently about a particular tech, I forget what it was, that wasn't all that useful, but then enabled like VPNs to be really common. So I'm thinking in that same direction of like, I don't know what NFTs are going to make available. But for me, the excitement about NFTs being buying and selling apes right now is driving adoption and money for the early adopters. But I think it being everywhere is going to potentially unlock potential actually useful future applications, but it's going to take this big excitement layer first in order for it to actually go anywhere. So that's my like 30-second version of how I feel about it.
I have to admit, NFTs is probably one of the first times I felt like an old man in their industry, where I'm like yelling at the cloud, like, what are you buying? I don't understand.
The modern day tulips, right?
Exactly. How about you, Taylor? From the framework perspective, and maybe what you know, companies are coming to you and talking to you about, do you see any trends that you want to discuss?
You know, I think I see, like, I kind of interact with two different worlds. So I think there's the Twitter world, the Twitter developer world, which is very sort of on the bleeding edge and sort of hype driven, I think. And you know, I agree with the testing thing. Lots of things about testing, lots of things about static analysis, tools like PHP Stan, Psalm. But the reason I say that I feel like that's pretty bleeding edge and probably a minority of developers is because, like, the latest JetBrains developer survey showed that, I was really surprised, just 25% of PHP developers said that they wrote any tests at all, which is just, I think, kind of wild and illustrates the fact that a fact that I've kind of learned over and over again is not to trust Twitter for like discerning developer trends, because it just tends to be sort of like the most cutting edge people that really like programming, you know, they're really excited about it. But the other trends I see on there, for a while, I did feel like I saw a lot of people getting into Next.js, Nuxt.js, sort of Jamstack type of applications. And that was, I mean, partly a driving force behind me creating Laravel Sanctum is having a really easy way to authenticate these types of front ends that are JavaScript based kind of framework front ends, but they still want to talk to a Laravel application because of all of the sort of power that you get with Laravel, like sending mail, queuing jobs, the ORM, notifications, all those things that aren't typically in JavaScript frameworks, especially things like Next or Nuxt. So that was a driving force behind me creating Laravel Sanctum. So those are kind of the main things I've noticed, is sort of code quality, static analysis, and a little bit of that Jamstack stuff as well.
Interesting. All right, I want to change it up a little bit here. We all have kids. I think the three of you have younger kids than I do. Again, I guess I'm the old man here, which is fine. I'm good with it. But when I was a younger person, I mean, things like Star Trek and Dick Tracy watch and things like that, those were the things that drove our future. And then we end up creating them, right? We have flip phones and then we have, you know, iPhones, and then the iWatch, you know, we created the things that we saw as children and thought that, like, that's so far in the future, you know, that would be crazy to see that. Except Dick Tracy. I never understood Dick Tracy because he was in the past, but he had like this watch he could use as a phone. It baffled me. But what are your young people, what do you think they're seeing today that they're going to build tomorrow? Are you guys seeing that? Because I have input on this. If you're curious. Now my kids are older. They're young adults now. They're out of college. And it baffles me because they've grown up in this technology and things like Facebook and Instagram. And where when I was growing up through this stuff, I was always fascinated by how is this working? Like how's this being done? And that's what led me down the road of programming. Now it's like a utility to them. It's like the light switch in your house. They don't care. You know, it's available to them. They have no interest in the underlying technology. So I'm always curious about what direction we think, where is our future tech coming from, our future young tech leaders, and what does that look like?
I guess I'll go first. One thing I see so many surprising things that make me laugh. So like just the other day, I was sitting down to watch a show with James, our 11-year-old, and it was a show that was not something we were going to stream. It was something that was supposed to come on at 7 o'clock. And we all sat down. It was like 6:45. And James was like, okay, let's start the show now. And I was like, well, it doesn't start till 7. And I could tell like his brain was like trying to process what I just said. Like, and he was kind of like, well, what do you mean? Like, can't we just start it now? And I was like, wait a second. I realized we had never actually sat down to watch a scheduled show, and he actually didn't understand the concept of like live TV being on a schedule at all. And he's 11 years old. And I was like, I thought about it for a second. And I was like, well, I guess we've never really done this or explained it. And so I had to go through how we used to have a paper TV guide, and like, that would show you when shows would come on. Anyway, just so many things have changed. But one thing I've noticed is both of my kids, I think there's just such a big, they're both really interested in, and there's a lot of interesting people doing multimedia content creation on YouTube or podcasts or whatever. And when I was a kid, it was cool to make your own website. But I feel like for a lot of kids now, it's more about like having your own YouTube channel, having your own TikTok channel. And I used to kind of be down on my kids like watching YouTube, but then like once I sat down and watched it with them and kind of looked at what they were interested in, it's like the content is so focused to their interests and it's so high quality and well-made. Like my daughter, who's 9, really likes to watch this kind of artsy crafting type channel by this girl named Mariah Elizabeth. And her content is like extremely well-produced. It looks like it could be on a regular TV channel, but it's like such this niche thing that all these kids can tune into and be interested in. And it's really well-made. And I think it's kind of inspiring my kids to want to be like entrepreneurial in that way, like create content, but not necessarily websites, like, you know, video content, audio content, learning content. And I see that with a lot of their friends too, a lot of the other kids I'm around.
Interesting. Eric?
Yeah, for me, mine's kind of, my kids are pretty weird, I think, compared to most people. they love reading like real books. They will not read on a Kindle or, you know, anything like that. So I still buy them real books every month, you know, to read. But as far as online stuff, they are big into Roblox, which is this terrible gaming system that these kids love for some reason. It's like little terrible block characters. It's I don't get the joy behind it, but they will play it for hours if I don't cut them off from it. And then the same way entrepreneurial spirit, they see, you know, people buying all these things, you know, for their characters and you know, if you build a game, then you get money because people, you know, donate. And I'm not real sure how it all works, but so they get into, you know, wanting to try to learn how to build games and stuff, but they have a little interest, but they won't actually take the next step, you know, to actually learn and stuff like that. But they just kind of, they show some sort of interest in that, which I think is cool. And I'm trying to think of anything else kind of way out there that they're into, and mine's not the same way. They don't, I was trying to have a conversation with them the other week ago about beepers, because, you know, we used to have them back in the day. And then about like skating rings, your mom would give you a quarter and you'd be like, call me when you're ready to leave. They have no concept of any of that. You know, it's just sort of funny how, you know, they probably see the world much differently than we even do now, but sometimes they don't, you know, tell us about it, or we don't grasp it the way they do. But that's sort of all I can think about right now.
How about you, Matt?
Well, one of them, certainly, like Taylor, my son was absolutely obsessed with Beyblades for about 2 years, and all he wanted was to make a Beyblades YouTube channel, and just share and teach people and stuff like that. And it never happened because his mom is very nervous about privacy. So we have kind of kept them off of our, like, I don't say his name publicly. I have two Instagrams, one with my kids and one without my kids and stuff like that. But at some point we're going to let him do stuff like that. So he certainly wants to create. My daughter does too, but they're also just performers. Like, he plays drums, you know, she dances. So they're going to be performers anyway. So that's just one medium. Like, he also enjoys playing drums for people not on YouTube. So I don't know how much of that is like a definite thing, more just like, oh, that's just a new arena that's been opened up to them that there weren't to others. He learned a little bit of programming through code.org, which any kid can do, is for free. You just go to studio.code.org, and really liked it and shared the app he'd built with all of his friends. And it was a guided tutorial teaching him how to make like a Flappy Bird clone. So it's not as if he like had a lot of creative control into it, but the fact that he had made it was really special for him, and it made him interested. He's also got some robotics kits that he really likes working with, but it's not like every second. Like, I know some kids, like one of my nephews, he's like, he saves up for years for the biggest Lego kit he can get and makes it, you know, like, but that's not my son. Like, he likes robotics for sure, but he also likes playing with the remote control car. So I don't know if I've seen any like really strong, this is definitely the future of kids in tech. But I do think that like a lot of the things that interested us, or at least me when I was a kid, in terms of tech, like learning how the thing works, being able to make it on your own, I think was the most exciting thing for me in terms of like programming, is like the first time I made a game in BASIC and can say, hey, play this game, felt really cool, just the way it did for him in, you know, code.org. But in terms of the future, he does also really enjoy watching shows that are set in space in the future. He's got a couple of his favorite shows. They're just normal kids in space. Like, he has one watches called Miles from Tomorrowland. And it's just a kid in space, but instead of the family living in a house, they live in a spaceship. So I do think that, like, as it was for us when you were younger, they're kind of defining what the future looks like. But interestingly, like, life in Miles from Tomorrowland is not that different from life in Star Trek. Like, a lot of those visions are still the same, right? Like, he's got a hoverboard. They've got a place where you can pretend stuff down, sort of like the what's it called, deck in Star Trek, you know, and they go around and explore and they meet aliens. You know, it's just kind of like, it's a lot of the same stuff. They've got a lot of the same visions and dreams. So I guess that's what I got.
That's great. Okay. Got a little bit more time. I want to get a little bit more out of you, if you don't mind. You brought up Caleb earlier in Livewire. We sponsor Caleb on GitHub. I'm a huge fan of Livewire. I even mentioned something to Taylor during her interview. Well, as a side note to her interview, I'm like, hey, you know, just what's your thoughts of this? I'm a big fan of Livewire, but just in general, you know, again, in the early days of open source, like, making a living off of open source was kind of a no-go. It was like very difficult to do. With things like Patreon, GitHub sponsorship, and just even the models that are being built around open source, and Laravel is an open source framework, and several people have, you know, built businesses around that open source framework. Do you think open source is a more approachable way of making a living now, or do you feel like it's still just as challenging? I guess we'll start with Taylor.
I feel like it's definitely going to be challenging to make a living, as in make your entire livelihood on open source. I think that's probably pretty rare and pretty hard, but I do think there's more ways to make some extra fun money. You might say, like, you know, enough money to have a date night once a week or go out to dinner more often or whatever. I think that's definitely more accessible now with things like GitHub sponsors, which makes it super easy to sponsor people. At Laravel, we sponsor a good handful of people that do cool stuff, including Caleb. So I definitely think it's easier to make some money. I think making enough to really support your entire life, you know, to where it's your full-time job is tough. It obviously can be done, as we've seen a few people do it, but I think those are sort of rare cases, and it's probably good just to kind of manage expectations. You know, if you really want to build your own thing and support yourself full-time, you should probably just charge for that thing, or build something free and then charge for some premium service on top of it, kind of like Laravel and Laravel Forge. I think that's just a little bit more achievable, but if you're fine, if you only want to make, you know, a couple hundred extra bucks a month to, you know, mess around with or whatever, then I think that's definitely much more achievable and accessible than it used to be, just because we have better tooling around it on GitHub and stuff like that.
Okay.
I think I agree with Taylor. One of the things that happened when Adam Wathen left Titan, there's a theme here, but when Adam left Titan, because he was able to be so successful not doing open source at the first point, but making his books, and then later he made more money making courses, I think a lot of people saw that and said, oh, I can make books and I can make courses, and a lot of them did, they didn't all see the level of success that Adam had. And it's not because they're bad, you know, sometimes it's because of, they may have made exactly the same quality, but not as many people wanted it. They may have made the exact same quality and as many people wanted it. They didn't market it as well. There's all sorts of different aspects of it. And I think that our society tends, not even just like society is like a bad thing, but just the way we talk about things tends to amplify the people who do something in a way that lines up with what everybody else wants. And so NFTs is another thing. You hear a lot about the people who buy NFTs and then turn around for three times the same price a couple of days later, but not a lot about the people who lost all their money from buying NFTs, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think the same thing is true with this type of open source sponsorship. It is certainly possible. It is much more possible than it was before. Like Taylor said, we do have the tooling, but there are also a lot of people who have kind of like hoped and dreamed to quit their job because of it and have not been able to do it. And again, what is it? How much of it is the early adopter advantage? How much of it is because the quality or the being in the right target market? You know, like Caleb and Adam, I know personally, are both very, very thoughtful and very intentional about how they do the things that they do such that they have the impact they want. They're not just saying, oh, I'm just going to make some videos and then put them out and see if people buy them. There's research and marketing and just obsessive planning and thinking about what's right for this market at this particular moment, which a lot of us don't have the ability to do, or at least we would have to do a lot of work to get to that point. Not everyone sees it. So yes, you can make a full-time job doing it. Yes, it's probably a little bit more likely now than it was before because the tooling exists and therefore it's been introduced as a concept. And a lot of the things that would allow you to do it in the past also still exist. Like companies like Google have long employed people whose full-time job it is just to contribute to particular open source projects, right? So like that's not gone. But I do think that anyone who would think that it's easy or even necessarily likely that they're going to be able to do something like what Caleb did, where GitHub sponsorships covers your full freight, is probably it's a little unrealistic to think of it as common or easy. So
yeah, the same for me. Go ahead.
I was just going to chip in really quick. I also think it's rare for someone to sustain themselves on open source and that's all they do is open source. Like people like Caleb or maybe like Evan Yu with Vue, like Caleb sells sort of premium access to videos through GitHub sponsors as like a payment platform, and like Evan sells ad space on the Vue website through Patreon. Like there's still a product being sold there, even though it's through like sort of a donation platform as a billing service. I think it's more rare to like totally sustain yourself purely on GitHub sponsors, purely with nothing in return except the library itself. I feel like I did hear of an example of this recently, actually, but I'll have to look at what it was. But I just think it's really rare. And then also, I think people are more likely to support projects that they feel like are the backbone of their like entire business. So things like Livewire, you know, where like you feel like you're kind of building your whole application on Livewire, or things like Laravel, or things like Vue, or like React, where you feel like this is like the real meat and potatoes of like our whole infrastructure, versus like, take for example, like a date parsing library like Carbon. Like every Laravel application in the world uses Carbon, and it's a really nice library and tons of people use it. But I think for some reason, psychologically, you know, just less people are just less likely to support, you know, a library like that versus something like that's more frameworky, like Livewire or Vue or React or Laravel. And I'm not totally sure the reasons for that, because I feel like, you know, it's still a really nice library. It's still widely used. I don't know if it's just like a psychological thing where it feels like smaller or like more replaceable. But and then I think because of that, because people mainly sponsor kind of frameworky type projects, and there's just sort of by definition very few of those types of projects around. So I think that's another challenge in terms of building a really sustainable open source, a monetary type thing.
Yep. I agree with everything both of them have said. I was going to say, you know, you can't expect just to upload some open source code and expect to make money off of it. You basically have to have the entrepreneurial spirit, you know, to go and sell your, you know, market it somehow, do all this other stuff. And most coders probably don't want to do that, or they would have created a product that they can just sell, you know, as a SaaS app, or, you know, get a job doing it that would pay probably more than they're going to make actually through sponsorships and stuff like that. But there's just, you know, like Matt and Taylor both said, there's just so much into building this little ecosystem around your open source code. You're basically creating a product, and that's, you know, many people don't want to do that, I guess. So that it's going to be really hard to do, but it can be done.
All right, let's stick with you, Eric. This will be the last topic. I appreciate everybody for your time. I do want to get one more out there. Again, I think we have three very unique perspectives here. What advice would you give somebody today who was considering starting a career in web development, specifically PHP, even going as far as saying, you know, interested in the Laravel framework? What sort of advice would you give that person?
As far as like learning or just kind of in general?
Learning, what to watch out for, just, yeah, in general.
Yeah. Well, the first thing that comes to mind is just, you know, how much stuff is in web development. You know, even though Laravel is this great piece, you know, you have all this other stuff too. You know, you've got your HTML, CSS, web servers, all this stuff that you kind of have to start grasping and understanding before you even get to the point of, you know, coding and things like that. You know, for me, the way my mind works is when I first started, there wasn't a whole lot of tutorials or anything. It was kind of the basic, just straight PHP stuff, but I knew I wanted to build this. So PHP to me was a means to that end. And so I would just follow a tutorial, build a little bit, you know, with my end goal in mind of having this working web app at the end. And so that's sort of the way I look at things is, you know, say I want to build this app that's, you know, a Craigslist clone, then I'm going to go and figure out how to write things to the database, how to pull them out, what a database even is. But, you know, and as far as like learning, there's so much stuff out there now. You know, you've got YouTube videos, Laravel Daily puts them out every day. You got Laracast that has, you know, just tons of great content. You have Matt's book to get you started. It's just, there's just so much more today than, you know, back when we started, probably, you know, early 2000s, showing my age. But it's just a whole different mindset to me. Like I can't, I don't know how I would explain it now if I met somebody just, you know, fresh and telling them how to come into it. I think probably Matt probably has a better answer since I know he does this a lot more, but that's sort of where I would go. Just tell them to start watching tutorials and learning as much as they can and playing around and just kind of treating it like a game, basically, is how I like to learn.
Gotcha. Matt?
I think what Eric said was really good in terms of the way to learn in general. There are so many incredible learning resources out there. And we always say, read the docs, sign up for Laracasts, follow Laravel News, check out Laravel Daily. We built a project at Titan called OnRamp. It's onramp.dev that tries to walk you through, here's the things you need to know. Because a lot of people would say, that's cool, I understand how to learn, but I don't understand what to learn. So the idea behind OnRamp was to say, well, here's the things you should know. You should know HTML, you should know CSS, you should know some basic JavaScript, you know, you should understand how servers work and, you know, just these basic things. And we tried to stretch it out saying, these things are helpful for you to know, but you don't need to know them to actually build the basic thing. So that's a good place to look. I would say that the number one piece of advice outside of that I would give though is when I'm bringing in apprentices or people who are new to the industry, they often get caught up in advanced architectural patterns that, because the people who are leading, and I've been saying this for years, the people who are leading a community are often, or who are reputable or whatever else, are often the people who are at the bleeding edge, just like Taylor said earlier, which means they're really excited about things that are not necessarily what most people should be doing on a day-to-day basis. And that doesn't make them wrong for being excited about those advanced techniques, but it means that, like, we don't often do a good job of communicating to these new people. That's not what you should be worrying about right now. And so when I work with apprentices, they'll show me some code that's great. And they say, oh, I felt like I should have done this with this structure and this pattern, blah, 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 because I saw this famous person doing it. I'm like, those wouldn't have been appropriate here. Or worse, they do them and then I have to tell them to pull them back out. So keep it simple, stupid, and you ain't gonna need it are like the absolute most important things for a new person to learn. Like, do what it takes to do the thing you wanna do and no more. And allow people who are more advanced than you to tell you, you know, when to add those things, but don't just assume because you've heard somebody talking about it, therefore you should fit it into every single one of your apps. That's just a really common misconception. And I wish I could give specifics, but I feel like I always pick the same target, so I won't this time. But essentially just like, if does it do the job? Cool. Good enough. Right. That's kind of my take on it. So.
Taylor.
You know, definitely get a firm grasp of, PHP, the language. Sometimes I get a lot of questions that are questions about things. Hey, can Laravel do this when you can actually just do it with PHP itself? So learn the language. I think definitely, even if you're going to try to stick with Blade or Livewire, I think it's just in your career's best interest to learn some JavaScript, because I feel like you're probably going to encounter that down the road. So, you know, pick up a little bit of Vue or React or whatever, just so you have a feel for sort of the popular JavaScript ecosystem. I would say learn some database stuff, learn SQL. You know, you don't have to write 100 line SQL queries like you might do in a big enterprise company, but learn how to write raw SQL, learn about database indexes, how to make sure you're writing efficient queries. A lot of Laravel performance stuff I see comes from that. Learn a little bit of CSS. I like to encourage people to be able to prototype something themselves, you know, so know enough about PHP, about JavaScript, about CSS to where you can start building some real things, maybe just for yourself, some small applications, because I think once you start digging in and start building things for real, you're going to learn so much more than you could just like reading, you know, surfing around the web, reading blogs about how to do things, whatever. Just dig in and start working on it. And when you get stuck, you know, you can hit Laracast or Stack Overflow, but you're going to learn so much just digging in and building something from front to back by yourself, where you have to build the back end, you have to tinker around with the front end. And I think it's just going to really level up your skills. Try to hang out around people that know more than you do. I feel like I leveled up a lot in my career when I was programming on teams that had people that were a lot more advanced than I was, had a lot more experience, you know, just a lot more years under their belt of programming. Not only just because of like technical expertise, but because of like, they know how to approach problems because they've had more experience than you have. And, you know, they sort of know the ropes, you know, when we see this, we kind of expect that, or when we see this kind of bug, oh, it's usually this kind of thing. And they can help you with debugging, with kind of approaching tasks, how to, you know, divide up an application to work on it in sensible ways. Let's see if anything else comes to mind. Those are kind of the main things, you know, being able to prototype something yourself. If you can do that, I think you have a pretty good all around well-rounded skill set probably.
Eric, if you wouldn't mind, can I say one more thing in response? Taylor, one of the things that Taylor said, I think was really great, which is learning that you don't necessarily have to do it the Laravel way. You could just do it in PHP, but there's also an element where some of the worst code, and I seldom kind of try to really criticize code, but some of the worst code I've seen written by people who are new to Laravel is when they don't understand or don't trust what Laravel can do out of the box. Understand is better for this context. Trust is for another day. And so they try to write it themselves. And so I would just say knowing what Laravel can do, and then they're also knowing what PHP can do, stuff like that, means you're going to not rewrite code that's already been written. And to be frank, a lot of people who try to rewrite it somehow seems to do stuff with like security, which is the worst thing to rewrite yourself. So know that any internal component that exists in Laravel is going to be written better in Laravel than you're capable of writing it. Not because Taylor's smarter than everybody else, although he's very smart, but also because it's been audited by thousands and tens of thousands of people, especially the people who care about doing that particular thing very, very well, right? Like I maintain a Laravel tool called Valet, but people who are really big nerds about certain parts of Valet put in pull requests to fix things that I don't even understand, right? So similarly, Taylor might be working on some auth thing, and I think Taylor's brilliant, but also some person who's like a super, super, super nerd about one particular part of password encryption might fix a bug or make something a little bit more secure than Taylor would have in the first place. So relying on what Laravel does out of the box, not only is going to be a lot better, it's also going to save you time, and it means that your code will play well with other features in Laravel that you may not need right now, but you might need later, right? So if you use the internal Laravel tooling or whatever your framework is, and then later you want to add something on, oh, Laravel has that, but I can't use Laravel's version of it because I built my own auth tooling or whatever it is. Well, if I'd used the internal one, they would have played together with a couple lines of code. So in general, I would just say, know the capabilities of the frameworks and the tools that you're working with so that you don't basically recreate it worse than it would have been if you had used the existing framework functionality.
That's great. All right. I want to, again, express how much I appreciate you all taking the time and talking with me on PHP Roundtable. I want to thank you not only for what you're doing in the community, but you know what you do with PHP, with Laravel. It's just, it makes my day easier. I mean, Eric, your stream of articles and keeping me up to date, I couldn't replace that if I tried. It's fantastic. And I mean, Taylor, you know, you're one of the reasons why I have a company and why I'm able to make a living. And you know, I have clients coming to me now, which is probably one of the weirdest things. It's like early on, we were using Laravel to replace legacy apps, or we were recommending Laravel to clients. Now you have clients coming to us because they want to use Laravel, or you know, because they want to upgrade their Laravel. It's like, oh, you're already using this. This is great. So appreciate all that. And I mean, all the stuff that comes out of Titan, Matt, is just been so valuable. Valet, I was a huge Valet user for a very long time, so I appreciate all that. So Matt, Eric, Taylor, you are what makes the PHP community great. Thanks for everything, and thanks for hanging out.
Thank you,
Eric, for having me.
Appreciate it. Love it.